You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us today. The topic today is going to be tokenization. Reason being is that tokenization, whether you're looking at the New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, even the London Stock Exchange, and other exchanges and other firms, whether it be Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or BlackRock and the like, everyone is understanding that the world of blockchain doesn't revolve around a single digital asset, meaning Bitcoin is not the center of the universe, right? The utility of a blockchain matters. So when you're talking about tokenization, you're talking about taking real-world assets and bringing them into the new world, where things are going to live, where you have transparency like none other, where you have immutability like you wouldn't have anywhere else. If you look at the OTC markets, right? You have OTCQB and this and that. You know, they have the pink, you know, ultra, whatever they call it. It used to be the pink sheets, which is, you know, the garbage of stocks. You know, anyone can go and have that, and they use that a lot for scams and the like. You know, and they still use it for stock, you know, promotion, manipulation, all this other stuff that transpires. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. All right, tokenization brings truth to the table. You can't have that manipulation. You can't have that naked shorting. You can't have a lot of things because that transparency comes out not only to the exchange, but to the world. When you have institutions that are grabbing data from the exchanges, they're grabbing this information. Now, the beauty of it is that when you have this information, this data, right, for a particular asset, if you have it and they file their documents with the SEC and all this other stuff, you know, institution has to go through a lot of different things. Usually they'll go and utilize Bloomberg to get information. But when you're talking about a tokenized asset, if all that data is within the smart contract and is there when everything is done and created, it changes the scope of things, because now any institution can actually go and really, you know, get the data they're looking for that they need. Not that they're looking for, they need it to make informed decisions. So they're able to get this and make informed decisions and do the things that they need to do for themselves and for their clients. When, you know, tokenization, it's going to be the main catalyst of the utilization of blockchain. You know, you have stable coins, and stable coins are, of course, they came about, you know, with Tether giving the ability for traders to have somewhere stable to park while they're trading, so they're not incurring losses. You know, just imagine you're trading Bitcoin or something, and you have your own Bitcoin and you're trading in and out. What are you trading in and out with? You need something to trade with, all right? And if you're trading Bitcoin with Ethereum or something like that, you can incur losses, you know, like nobody's business. So the stablecoin resolved this, but it evolved. It evolved to being a mode of commerce, okay? And again, if you look back in history, we can go back to the age of Babylon. We can go back to the Medici era, and that's probably where we would get a lot of the credit back then, which they created, and the token, you know, the coinage, and how they and how they utilize their methodologies for commerce. And with tokenization, it pushes that on a broader scale, on a global scale. So let's say you have a stock and you have it tokenized. What the New York Stock Exchange is doing with DTC or DTCC, what they're doing, they're making sure that each of those tokens are represented by a true stock, a true certificate somewhere that's being held somewhere. Now, do certificates get issued? No, not nowadays. Not nowadays. No, you know, you have your transfer agents, you have, you know, your clearing house. I mean, this is how things work, right? Way back when, during the Vanderbilt era, you know, you had people that had the ability to print stock certificates in their basement. Now you can't do that. You know, during the 80s, you had some shenanigans that were going on. You know, but when you're dealing with truth in trade, truth in the stock market, truth in any market, crypto markets, you know, you can't, the thing is with the crypto markets, it is probably a more honest system than most. And I'm gonna really clarify what I mean by that. Not that the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ aren't honest. What I mean as far as the methodology. Okay, when you are trading on a decentralized crypto exchange, what's happening there is that you have it in your wallet. You have to have the token in order to trade it or swap it on a decentralized exchange. That's a fact. Is there. It's not something that's made up. It's not something that's phantom. It's not something that is a derivative or something that just works on that platform. You have it, you trade it, you go, you put it back in your wallet, and you move on. You know, but when you're talking about the digital environment, you know, the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, when they're trading things, even though there is real stock there, but at the end of the day, the institutions and everything, they are trading the digital version of it. Okay, only when they need it is it there. So it's there in a depository trust company, DTCC, right? So everything is there. It's not that it's not there. But they're going to streamline that, and that's what's going to make the things really fantastic. You know, once this all transpires, and I know that they're testing it now, you know, what, and word, rumor has it, that they've already started testing this with some heavy hitters in the financial industry. And when this comes to light, and I think it's going to come to light sooner than later, it's going to change the scope of things. Every firm on Wall Street globally, and again, this is not just on the New York NASDAQ, you know, you're going to have exchanges all over the world that will have to, at some point, will have to comply to what's happening. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you have horse and buggies all over the place, or you have an ice box in your house. Everyone's getting refrigerators. Everyone's getting cars. Are you going to be the only show in town with a horse and buggy and an ice box? Maybe for novelty, right? Or maybe if you're going to have a horse and carriage business. But other than that, you're not going to have this stuff. You evolve. Technology evolves, and the exchanges need to evolve, and blockchain is that. As I said, you know, Bitcoin is not the center of the universe, nor is any digital asset, right? They are native tokens of a blockchain, and they serve their purpose with, you know, having the ability to pay gas fees and other things, you know, but that has evolved over time. But in its basic form, a native token is meant for gas fees that have to do with the blockchain. You know, it has evolved into what it evolved. It's there today, you know, where we are right now. This is why you have, you know, whether it be Ethereum, and you have Solana, and you have Pico Novus, and you have, you know, all these other native one, and Hyperliquid, you have these native tokens to these blockchains that increase in value because there's a supply and demand that's involved there. And also, you know, you're talking about the blockchain itself. So the more things that are going on there, the more valuable it will become over time. And that's how that works. Now, when you're talking about tokenization of stocks, you know, I think that's going to be, you know, I think initially they're going to do this on a very closed loop, you know, because they really don't want it. They really don't want people just having that willy-nilly in their wallet and taking it here, there, and this and that, you know, because it probably will make it more difficult for them to go, and if they needed to go issue a physical certificate, or if they needed to validate it, you know, if it was deposited with a firm, it may make it a little more difficult for them. But if it is blockchain, it really shouldn't be that difficult. If you have the certificate and it's on a smart contract that is linked to that particular token, then you're good to go. Okay, that token could be fractionalized, but it'll still have the same data. And that's what it all comes down to. I believe that we're going to see an understanding that's going to come about over a little bit of time, where you're going to have major, you know, exchanges globally that are going to adhere to this. We know New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, and now the London Stock Exchange is starting to implement 24-hour trading or 22-hour trading during the work week. I do hope that they're integrating blockchain into what they're doing, because if they're not, you know, basically, you know, what they have is nothing more than a market that's going to be open longer than normal, and I don't know how taxing that's going to be on their systems. I don't know how taxing that's going to be on the personnel. Again, when you're talking about blockchain, you know, and you're talking about tokenization, it makes it more streamlined, and it makes it very interesting, because now with that in mind, you're promoting global inclusion. And why do I say that? Okay, if you go to an exchange, or you're at a brokerage firm, you can't go, I mean, I don't think you can now, I mean, I don't think you can go buy a half a share or a quarter share of a stock. Maybe if you're going, you know, through one of their specialized products, yeah, but if you were to do that and try to move it out, it's going to be near impossible, because you can't fractionalize a stock. However, integrate blockchain, that comes in the door, you can. So now if you have a stock that's trading at 2,000 and somebody just wants to own that stock, let's say they wanted to own a SpaceX, they wanted to own an Nvidia or an Apple, just to say that they owned it, or they own it right now. If they had $100, they can buy a fractional share of any of those. Makes it interesting. Promotes global inclusion, and that's the way to go. You know, I think that when you have like the likes of you have Robinhood, you have Binance, you have Coinbase, they're all pushing not only the perpetual markets, which is a fantastic thing if you're a trader, but they're also pushing the tokenization of stock and stock, that type of stock trading on their systems. Now, the only question that I have there is that, you know, if you have a company that issues a stock and you're promoting the trading of that particular stock on your platform and it's tokenized, does it have the rights that a stock would have? That's one of the key questions that do come out. If you have a tokenized asset on the New York and NASDAQ, it does have the rights of an equity. That's a fact. However, you know, you have people out there that really, you know, that are trading. So they really don't care about the rights. They just care about, hey, can I make a buck? And they're trading it. And that's pretty much, you know, what they're doing there. Does this change the mechanics of it? No. You know, the thing is that when you have a centralized crypto exchange, and they do this, and they have trading on their platform. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have decentralization, meaning that you have control of your assets. Okay, if you're a centralized exchange, they hold everything for you. Okay, which means they make money, just like a bank. You know, you have your money at a bank, you see it on your account and everything. You think you have cash there, but you know the reality is you really don't. You know, it's there, and when you need it, it comes out of the bank. It's there. It's ready to go. Okay, and if you think that, you know, you think that your cash is sitting in a vault, you're out of your mind. You're not. It's not sitting in there. You know, when they redeem, when you're moving money around, you know, they're issuing new money for that. And that all comes down to the central banking and everything else, but that's a story for another day. But there are a lot of things that go on there that make it easier for them to function, but it also puts everything in their control. So when you have a centralized crypto exchange, everything's in their control. If something goes wrong on their end, you know, it can be doomsday for an investor. That's the reality of it. You know, so that this is why I prefer decentralization, because if you have a decentralized wallet and you have your assets there, you know, you have control of it. Something goes wrong, that's on you. And that's one of the things that people are concerned about the most. That what if I forget this, or what if I do this, or what if I send it to the wrong place? Yeah, if any of those things happen, you are SOL, right? Because it's in your control. So I think that the real desirability for people to utilize a centralized exchange is because they don't have to worry about making a mistake. They don't have to worry about, you know, losing their assets, because the exchange is responsible for that. And now it's not insured, right? However, it kind of is by them. They're guaranteeing that they're taking care of your stuff. You know, they may be going and utilizing it and leveraging it outside of the exchange to make money, but that's the name of the game. You want somebody to hold your assets, they have to go make money, and your money, you know, other than that, what's the purpose? How do they have a thriving business? They don't. So you got to take the good with the bad. If you don't mind, you know, allowing someone to have control of your keys, because in crypto, your key is your crypto. You have no keys. It's not your crypto anymore. You know, things have evolved in the crypto space, where now you have the likes of Coinbase and so on and so forth, where they have an obligation that if you want to take your assets out and have it in a decentralized wallet, you have every right to do that. You know, they can't prevent you from doing that. They sit under the regulation, of course. But Binance, you know, they do the same thing, right? And that's why they make billions and billions a year. I mean, again, as a holder, if you don't mind someone else controlling your assets like a bank would, then you're good. But if you do mind and you want to control your own assets, then decentralization is the way to go. All right. Now I want to go over, you know, financial products. You know, and in the DeFi space, financial products are evolving. You know, and this is, and I'm going to go over Hootdex, because I think it's important. You have a lot of exchanges out there. They go and they create products for their exchange, right? You know, on Hootdex, products are created on chain. They are created not just to stay on Hootdex. They're created for a broader use. They're created for an institutional use, for individual use. They're created with the premise that institutions, corporations, the financial industry itself will start adopting these financial products, right? And that is one of the catalysts with all the different types of financial products that you do see on Hootdex. They're there for a reason. They give transparency, you know, to certain products. So I'll give you an example. If you have a digital credit note token, right, a DCN, you know, that is kind of like a bond, right? Whether it be a junk bond or a corporate bond, whatever it may be, it can be a short-term commercial note, you know, but whatever the case may be, it can be perpetual, it can be fixed term. The reality is that you have over 200 data points that are available for each and every token that is created via HOOTDEX. That is an important thing. And because HOOTDEX is built on the Piku Novus blockchain, the Piku Novus blockchain, about maybe 3 months ago or so, okay, they integrated on a protocol level ERC-20 and EVM compatibility. Now, what does that mean? That means they run on the same rails that Ethereum runs on. That changed everything for the blockchain, changed everything for HOOTDEX, actually, because now the tokens that are created on HOOTDEX, now and in the future, they have those same characteristics. Now, if you're talking about perpetuals, anything margin-wise, you can forget about it. That has to stay with an exchange. I don't care if it's Coinbase, if it's Hyperliquid, if it's Binance, if it's this, if it's Joe Schmo, whatever it is, it has to stay there, because once you start moving tokens that are margined, you can have a double spending effect, and it can create a big issue. So you won't expect them, because they won't really be tokens anyway. They'll be token-ish, right? But they're not going to be portable, and they shouldn't be portable. Now, if you're talking about, say real estate, if you're tokenizing real estate, you know, people, and I've seen this, that they utilize NFTs to tokenize real estate. Now, do I agree with that? I'm going to tell you honestly, no, I don't, because there's a better way to do it. You don't need an NFT. It doesn't need to be a non-fungible token. Why does it have to be non-fungible? It should be fungible. It should have some sort of price discovery on it. It should be a token that can be fractionalized, that can promote global inclusion. So if you have a piece of real estate and the price discovery, you're looking at, let's say, wherever they're getting the price from, and it goes into the system, and it recalibrates the value of the token, there you go. And now you have fractionalization. So someone can own a piece of the Empire State Building. They can own, you know, $100 worth. However, think about it. It opens up the floodgates for the possibilities. Opens up the floodgates. And that's something that even HOOTDEX has done. Okay, you know, with the help of XMG FinTech, you know, these are the things that are transpiring, and this is why I bring it up. You have exchanges that are doing a lot of interesting things. They're throwing predictive the prediction markets in there too, and HOOTDEX is going to have that as well. So that's they're no stranger to what is going to go on there. However, you know, when you have these different products, so you have a playland, a financial playland for people to pick and choose what they want to do, what they want to get involved with, and how they want to operate. And it gives financial institutions product to go work with. You know, I'm going to go back to a DCN, you know, a digital credit note token. You know, if a corporation was going to issue a debt instrument, and they were going to issue a bond, let's say, as opposed to issuing the bond, if they were going to go do a Reg D in the United States to do that type of thing, they can tokenize it and put things in play where it makes it very interesting for the holder, because typically, if you are issuing a note from a corporation, it's not a public company, you don't have a symbol, you don't have all these things going on. You know, it's a promissory note, you know, and the investor hopes and prays you're going to pay them one day. However, if you have it tokenized, now you have price discovery, you have transparency, a lot of things come into play, you see? A lot of things come into play. So now they basically have to have this stuff out there. And then also what it does, it gives the investor in this product the ability at some point in time to get liquidity if they want to in the open market. Institutions will be able to do this via an OTC desk, and they can trade amongst each other. But when you're talking about as an individual holder, and you say, hey, I have this, and now maybe I want to sell this off to XYZ private equity fund or firm or or hedge fund or whatever the case may be, and you're looking to do that, how do you do it? How do you do it when you have a note? You have to actually go and go through all this stuff to potentially get it done. But if you have the ability to go and go onto an OTC desk and you have your token, you're able to do it that way confidentially, you know, then it makes it easier. And one of the biggest things for the DCN is one of the characteristics is that there's a yield that is on it, just like you have with a bond. The difference is this yield propagates, it distributes every hour on the hour to the holder. And the obligation of the corporation is to go and redeem this every quarter or every or semi-annually, whenever they have it on their schedule to do, you know. But as the as an investor, you know it up front. And it's things like this that change things, right? Even when you look at an ETF now, you know, even though they report stuff, you see it on their website and so on and so forth, you know, that's all well and good. But let's say you want to go know at that particular moment in time what that ETF was holding. Would you be able to? Well, chances are probably no. Probably no. So what do you do? Well, the only thing you can do is wait. Now, if you had something like a digital basket token, a DBT, which is kind of like, it's kind of like an ETF in a way. And I'll explain to you why. A DBT was designed to be transparent. It was designed for a trading account scenario, but it evolved where you have an account that has the assets in there, and the public, anyone, an institution, they can see at that particular moment exactly what that trader is doing, what they have, what positions they have in real time, and it calculates the value of the actual token. And that's what makes it interesting. And I think that at some point in time, that'll evolve to maybe, you know, ETF issuers will see this as a value add to what they're doing. Okay, where trading houses may see this as a value add. Just imagine you're dealing with a trading house and you have your, you know, you want to see what's going on with what you're doing. All right? What they're doing, actually. So how do you do it otherwise? A little difficult. Anyway, I just wanted to touch on these things. Again, tokenization was the topic of the show. I think it's critically important. I think a lot of things are going to happen. I think you're going to see every major bank, brokerage firm, financial institution, whatever it may be, exchange, they're going to be drinking the same Kool-Aid. They're going to be doing it at some point or another. But I do urge you to go and check out Hootdex. You can go to hootdex.com to get information. You can go to hootdex.net to go check out the exchange and see what's going on there, because there are a lot of interesting things that are happening there. And again, people look at an exchange, they think, I'm dealing with stuff just on that exchange and that's it. However, you know, with the products that are on Hootdex, they're meant to go and have life outside of Hootdex. And that's why. That's the beauty of it. That's what makes it so different, so much different than other platforms out there. You're able to have freedom to roam. And isn't that fantastic? That's the purpose of decentralization, having freedom to control what you have it, move it where you want to move it, and do what you want to do with it without anyone telling you otherwise. All right. Anyway, I want to thank you guys for listening and tuning in and bearing with me as I go on a rant, but I think this stuff is very important. I think you should know about it. But we will be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps Radio. Until then, I want you guys to have a fantastic trading day.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Belathkath and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.